You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Short Box. See, there's imaginary beats behind me. I'm Jarrett.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Donald.
See how we kind of switch things around there? Today's episode is going to be the gang, that's us, talks about our two of our favorite superhero comic book based animated TV shows. Could be modern, could be from when we were children. And we're going to each go around, talk about a show we liked, why, and maybe give an episode and tell why we, you know, thought that specific episode was the tits.
Indeed.
Kevin, you're going to start us off. Give us an animated TV show.
All right. I'm going to take us back to the 80s.
Oh, such a good time.
So much Coke and Genesis.
Yes. G.I. Joe Season 1, Episode Number 55.
Nice.
Jesus.
Yes.
Very indeed. Specific.
Well, 54 and 55, actually. It's a two-parter. It's called There's No Place Like Springfield. Almost like playing on that Wizard of Oz, There's No Place Like Home.
You sure this isn't The Simpsons?
You know. Maybe they used the
was
same
there a
time?
Guy that said no a lot and it's kind of blocky cartoon?
Yeah, a little bit.
Eat my shorts.
A little something, something.
Before you go into the episode, tell us what is it about G.I. Joe that you love so much, the cartoon?
Well, I like the patriotism. How these men, they love their country. And also Cobra, I have to say. The Cobra organization is one of the coolest villainous organizations ever.
The villains from DC Comics?
No. The villains of Cobra, you know, Cobra Commander, Destro, the Baroness. What a lovely lady.
Mm-hmm.
Evil, but lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And also the vehicles they use. I mean, the Rattlers. They always had the coolest bases, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had like the Cobra Temple, the Cobra this.
Castle Grayskull.
Castle Grayskull is actually a good guy place.
That's He-Man. It's also He-Man.
But Snake Mountain. Oh. It's funny you mentioned it, though. Snake Mountain, that was a cool hideout.
That was.
Snake was the shit, yeah.
And if you want to keep going there real quick, Mumra's pyramid, Black Pyramid, was a freaking cool place in Thundercats.
Oh, every month he'd have that pyramid, and he was just on it. You couldn't deal with him.
See, I barely even remember the pyramid. That didn't stick in my head too much.
Oh, stuck in mine.
Yeah, the pyramid was pretty cool. It'd shoot like a thing out of the top,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Like when you go to Luxor in Vegas, yeah, it's like Mumra's in there.
Yeah, they're like four pillars, and they would shoot up like another pyramid, like a some kind of mystical pyramid above the black
like
one.
Like a fifth pyramid.
Yeah, like a fifth pyramid. Really cool.
That was a movie, The Fifth Pyramid.
Mm.
I've never seen that. I have never seen that film.
Well, I'm working on it right now.
Oh, okay. So, what was the episode you were talking about?
It's called There's No Place Like Springfield. Essentially, in part one, real quick, what happens is Shipwreck and Lady J are on a mission on this island to retrieve a guy named, a scientist named Professor Mulaney. He created a special formula that turns water into an explosive. And he escaped Cobra, and Cobra's looking for him. So basically, you know, the Cobra has their planes up in the air, looking and scouting, looking for where they're at. So they're in a little corner in this island, and Mulaney explains to them, hey, you know, I have the secret formula. It can't get into Cobra's hands, or else, you know, the world's going to be destroyed, essentially.
Right.
So to make things, so Mulaney's freaking out. He doesn't think he's going to make it. So he has this electronic stamper-looking device, and he sticks it on Shipwreck's head. And electronically, it implants the secret formula into his subconscious. But the only way to access it is you need to have a password, a code word.
True love's first kiss.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So
a lot of Disney.
He's kind of smart, though, this guy. Instead of just telling all the Shipwreck, he first implants it in there, and then he tells Lady J the secret password, and only she knows what it is. And basically, when she says it, then it will pop up.
Okay.
So basically, after that, the Cobra plane comes, bombs them. You know, they get separated.
People parachute out of things.
People
remember
parachute.
That? Everybody yeah, always parachute.
Yeah, well, that's true. No one dies. The plane blows up into 5,000 pieces.
Always like the Cobra song. Do 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 do
Cobra.
Then it goes.
Cobra. Oh yeah, that's the cool. Yeah, that
was great. That was
from, they also do that's that?
From
Cobra,
the movie.
Cobra, la la la.
That was from G.I. Joe the movie as well. Yeah, yeah. That was awesome, man. I remember that. Yeah. When we were kids, they used to like a recess. Cobra, la 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 la.
That was a cool movie.
That was cool.
When did they switch the TV show theme from G.I. Joe to Got to Get Tough?
Yo, Joe. It's funny you mention that. Now, I'm glad you brought it up, brother. The first few seasons of G.I. Joe was made through Marvel Sunbow Productions.
Yeah, Sunbow.
And this is where it all started. What you're talking about is the DIC. DIC.
Oh, so it's a different...
It's a different company. Basically, okay. They gave up the rights to it. They didn't want, I guess for whatever reason, they didn't want to do it anymore. And then they took it over. And that's why the animation looks different later on.
Mm.
But they kept some of the same voiceover talent. Obviously, Frank Latta, God rest his soul, who played Cobra Commander in Starscream. He went back.
He's dead?
Yeah, he died in the 90s.
Really?
You didn't know that? Yeah, the guy who did the voice of Starscream, Cobra Commander, the one we're so used to, that Fouls! You know, that very screechy voice.
I had no idea.
He's been dead almost 20 years.
Oh, Jesus, wow. I'm devastated.
Yeah, was it lung cancer?
Devastator.
I think it was like a somatic cancer. Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And knowing is half the battle.
Oh, no, my God.
I knew you were going to go there.
Here we go.
But go on.
But basically, the USS Flag, you know, their aircraft carrier for G.I. Joe, it comes up on the coast to rescue them. And they get back on. Well, sorry. Two people get back on. Lady J and the professor. But
Marianne.
But Shipwreck is still in his... In the little... I gotta describe it. It's kind of like the little ship or whatever that flies up in the air. He's stuck in that little shuttle in the water. And Cobra's attacking the flag. And Shipwreck is stuck. And he sinks. So he gets knocked out. He doesn't know what happens. So you don't know what happens. And then all of a sudden, he wakes up. In a hospital, and he has like a gray beard, and you know, the doctor of the G.I. Joe team.
Oh, Doc! Yeah. I remember not wanting that figure because he didn't come with a gun.
Yeah, well, of course, he's Doc. Yeah, he wore like those green shades. He had like those cult leader green shades. He would come in, so
Jim Jones shades.
Yeah, Jim Jones shades. So he comes in, he tells him, you know, hey, how you doing? And then his wife. So he believes to be his wife, comes in, Mara, who was in another episode earlier, who was like an old girlfriend of his, and he finds out he has a daughter, and named Althea. So, of course, he's confused. He's like, what the heck is this? I know I was married with a kid. But he's told, hey, it's been 6 years, you know, the battle against Cobra is over. To give him, they feed him this whole story about, oh, yeah, you defeated Cobra, it's over, their organization's done, Lady J died. You know, and so forth and so on. And, you know, you now run a business and you're, you know, a married, happy man, that kind of thing. So he's confused. He doesn't understand.
He wakes up, he's got a whole new life.
Yeah, he's a whole new life. He's like, there's no way.
Whole new world.
So,
don't you dig? Close your eyes, Shipwreck.
So Doc tells him, hey, just go home, relax. Okay, so he gets in the car, you know, he sees his home in this neighborhood called Springfield. Like, oh, nice neighborhood, you know, decent house, but I wish I remembered all this stuff. So he's like, oh yeah, you're starting from amnesia, don't worry, you'll remember. So his bird, Polly, you know, he always had that little bird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He comes along, he's talking to him, and then he turns the light out, and then you see like this little flashing thing, and he kind of like knocks him out. And then all of a sudden he starts having these illusions and delusions of these spirits coming after him, almost like you see like Cobra Commander like threatening him. You know, tell us the code, tell us the formula. What did Mileni tell you? Destro's there. What did he tell you? You know, and then
this is pretty heavy for a goddamn G.I. Joe.
Oh, it is. Too. I mean, it's basically, it's like a mind screwer. I mean, it just really gets into your head. So they're driving the Shipwreck crazy. He doesn't know if he's losing his mind, doesn't know what's going on. Then every time he drinks something, that drink again knocks him out. He goes into these illusions and just freaking out. They keep taking him back to this hospital. Which goes through a car wash, by the way, which is interesting. You know, I guess car wash, brainwash in a way.
Ah.
And basically he runs into some of his old G.I. Joe partners or G.I. Joe teammates. He all of a sudden discovers when they start threatening him, hey, you know, what did they tell you? You know, and then he gets into a fight. They start melting. Now, that's because they're synthoids. Now, back in the show, they had a couple episodes of these synthoid creatures where basically, like, they were made out of this gray, gooish material, but they can be reconfigured into a human being, even with the clothes, that they'll talk exactly like. Almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but just kind of like in reverse in a way, where you're just basically creating these, you know, these artificial beings from
LMDs.
This gray goo.
LMDs, yeah. Life model decoys.
Yeah, life model decoys. Oh, perfect. Exactly. So anyway, as we get to part two, the real Polly, because the bird was also a fake. The real Polly comes along and fights the fake one. It's kind of so it's kind of cool. He sees two
parrot
birds.
Fight.
Yeah, parrot fight. See the parrots, they're going at it. They're fighting each other. Now, the funny thing they never explain, of course, is how did the parrot, the real Polly, find a little device that can melt those things? It's not explained. So
hey, birds are smart. Birds are smart. Think, you know?
Yeah, he's smart. So he melts and destroys that one. So then Shipwreck starts coming around to it. He finally realizes, okay, something's not right here. So the nurse, the next time he's in the hospital, the nurse comes along with the drink to kind of knock him out. And he makes her drink it, and she knocks out. And then the Polly, the real one, tells him, hey, you know, hey, sailor, you know.
Give me a cracker.
Yeah, well, kind of like that, but kind of tells
I was going to say, that's what Polly should have said to the other bird that he killed. Bird. Like, Polly, want a cracker, bitch?
That would be cool, especially fishing for kids. But basically, you know, he starts helping him remember more of what happened. So he's like, okay, yeah. But Lady J must be alive, right? Because they're making her think that Lady J died. Because, wait a minute, Lady J has the formula, so I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So as Shipwreck starts regaining his memory, they break into the car wash, quote unquote, where you have a secret Cobra base. He sees all these experiments going down. He sees Tomax and Zaymot. You know, they're talking to Cobra Commander. They're all conspiring, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And they end up in this room. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, you know, Shipwreck's like, man, I can't remember the formula. I need Lady J. Now, again, another thing that's not explained. How does the bird know? The bird all of a sudden says the phrase. Basically, it was like frogs in winter. And all,
frogs in winter.
Yeah, that's basically what he says. And all of a sudden, Shipwreck's like, ah, yes, blah, 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 all these complicated chemistry formulas. And the last part, thallium 256 or something like that, you know? So then there's like a little water cup there. He pours it in there, and then it creates the explosion. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, of course, all of Cobra shows up in this room. You see Cobra Commander, the Baroness, everybody's up in there. The Dreadnoughts are there. And he's basically threatening to say, hey, look, I know the formula. Yeah, tell us what the formula is. I'm not going to tell you. And by the way, I'm going to blow this place up. So he lights like a little match. He's about to, like, he pours the formula down the sink. He's about to throw it in there to blow it up. But Destro's kind of smart. He knows, like, look, that's not going to do it, by the way. It's not going to ignite it. Really? I'm calling your bluff right now. And he just drops it. And everyone's freaking out. Oh, no. And it didn't work. So all of a sudden, it's like, Shipwreck's like, oh, I guess you were telling the truth. But then the Dreadnoughts, knowing that they're not the brightest guys, great, let's kill them. You know, basically, let's just blow them up. Destro's like, no. And all of a sudden, they ignite it. They blow up the kitchen, and it sets up a series of explosions. Basically, the island, which was basically the Cobra temple that the G.I. Joes were looking for, the Cobra base they're looking for, is blowing up in front of them.
Oh, cool.
So everything's going crazy. And then as that's happening, you see the real flag again come up. Oh, that must be it. This must be the signal. You know, let's go and save the day. And then eventually they go and they save Shipwreck. And one thing I forgot to mention, you know, the wife and the kid, that was a big part of this story, which kind of touched me, the fact that he thought that he had really had a wife and a kid.
Right.
But it turns out, unfortunately, they're synthoids.
Synthoids, yeah.
So as the island's blowing up, he runs back to his house and he's looking for them. He's like, yeah, come in, Hector. I think that's his real name. Like, I think it's Hector or something like that. Whatever. He runs back in. Delgado. He runs back in and is like, they have guns. You know, they're about ready to. Oh, this was funny. The little kid has a bazooka in her hand. It's like, how in the world does a little kid have a bazooka? But basically, the bird comes and melts them down and he finds out, oh, no, they were fake, too. So at the very end,
did want that family.
Yeah, it's sad. So yeah, so at the very end, Lady J, the real one, comes up and says, hey, Shipwreck, how's it going? Yeah, you know, you see Shipwreck's depressed. He's about ready to cry. He's like, was there anything in that house? No, just a dream or two.
Aww.
And then that's where the episode ends. And it's like, oh, poor guy. Where, you know, they basically messed with his head so much, made him believe that he had a family and he was going to settle down.
That's such an in-depth episode. I mean, like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Storyline, too.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's quite a bit there.
I know.
Like, man.
I mean, poor Shipwreck.
That's intense. Yeah, poor Shipwreck.
So, Donald, what do you have for your cartoon?
Well, I decided to go with something a little Disney-esque.
Okay.
And I'm going with Gargoyles.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if everybody remembers Gargoyles. It's kind of one of those that you either remember very well or you don't remember at all. Came out in, like, 1994-ish. And it ran for like 3 seasons, I believe, went to like 97 or something.
Okay.
It was produced by Walt Disney Television with Buena Vista Television. And it's basically, the premise is it features a species of nocturnal creatures known as gargoyles that turn to stone during the day. And it focuses on a clan led by Goliath, the clan of gargoyles. In the year 994, the clan lives in a castle in Scotland. They're betrayed and killed by humans, and the remainder are magically cursed to sleep, i.e. Kind of be frozen in stone form, until the castle rises above the clouds.
Naturally.
Yes.
As castles are prone to do.
So, basically what happens is a millennium later in 1994, a billionaire named David Xanatos.
That's a name.
I know. I thought David it was like some type of medication you would take to bring you up when you're down. Yeah. You need some David Xanatos?
Yeah, antidepressant.
Yeah, he purchases the Gargoyle's castle and has it reconstructed atop his New York skyscraper, thus awakening Goliath and the remainder of his clan. And so basically, Goliath and his clan, they try to adjust to the new world. And when they do that, they're aided by a sympathetic female police officer named Eliza Maza, or Maza. And they quickly come into conflict with Xanatos, who his reasons for bringing them back was not all good.
Oh, not altruistic.
No, not altruistic at all. He basically wanted to use them for evil purposes, for bad means, because he thought he could control them. Turns out the Gargoyles are much smarter than he thought. So basically, it becomes a very Macbeth-esque story, to be honest. There's a lot of betrayal and backstabbing.
Like experience
and,
stuff. Like
and, you know, when you're dealing with Scotland and castles and gargoyles and stuff, it would make sense that you would have something like that.
Right.
So basically, I watched the pilot. I rewatched it. I haven't seen it in ages. And what I forgot was the pilot is actually 5 episodes long.
Mm. Jesus.
You know, that was very common in the 80s and 90s when they introduced like a new show like that.
They'd really drag it out.
Yeah. Well, basically what they did was they did that primarily because then they could package it as a movie and sell it on VHS.
Smart move.
Yeah. So it was a big thing that they started to do in the 90s. They caught on. They're like, I've got an idea. Let's make some money, guys. And that's what they did. So I did watch all 5 of the pilot. I think the pilot, to me, is the most important because it sets the tone of the series. Mm-hmm. And it's also can be very standalone.
Right.
It does play out like a movie. So it's very fascinating. The betrayal at the beginning by one of their kinsmen, one of the human beings that they trust the most. Mm-hmm. A betrayal by a former lover. Learning the new world around you, your new surroundings, a fish out of water type scenario.
Once again, cartoons for kids. This is like deep shit. This is great.
Yeah, it's very mature.
That's what was great about the 80s and 90s cartoons. A lot of them were much more than simply selling toys. They told some good stories.
Right. And for the cast of characters, let's just go down this real quick. We have Goliath, who was voiced by Keith David, by the way, the same guy that did the Spawn animated. He did the voice of Spawn, if I recall.
A million voiceovers since then, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And he's great in There's Something About Mary.
And They Live.
And They Live. Oh, yes. Oh my goodness.
That alley fight scene that lasts like 10 minutes.
And Men at Work. No. Was it Men at Work? Not Men at Work.
I don't remember.
The trash one with...
That is Men at Work.
Men at Work.
Wait, no, that's the band. Yeah, that is... Yeah, that's it.
Charlie Sheen.
That's it. Men at Work. Yeah.
With the trash guys?
Yeah.
He plays their supervisor guy.
I completely forgotten about that movie.
And he has the best line, too. A guy, Charlie Sheen, like takes, or Emilio Estevez goes to grab a fry off his plate. Mm-hmm. And he grabs his hand and is squeezing his fingers. And he's like, never touch another man's fries.
It's so brilliant. It's such a good movie.
So, Keith David does the voice of Goliath. Goliath is a leader of the Manhattan Clan, they call him now. He, of course, is named because of the biblical giant, and the people in the castle in Scotland named him because of that. The rest of them didn't have names back then, just Goliath did. Right. The rest of them just, you know, went by faces and just talked to each other, and they knew who they were talking to. There was no, like, oh, you know what, what's-his-face did? They would have to go, you know what, old Redskin with the white hair and the eyes, and what he did? So I don't think that happened as much back then. But the rest of them got their names when they got to New York. Hudson, who is the elder and former leader of the clan, he's voiced by Ed Asner.
Oh, there you go.
And he had a pet dog-esque gargoyle that they called Bronx. They named him Bronx. Hudson took he named himself because of the river that they were near. And then you have Brooklyn, who is white-haired, red-skinned gargoyle that's kind of the second in command. He's somewhat sarcastic, impetuous attitude, and he's very He's a very good tactician. Mm-hmm. So that's why he's the second in command. Lexington is the smallest of the clan gargoyles.
Right.
He, of course, named himself after the avenue.
I lived on Lexington at one point.
He's very, how should I put it? He's very curious. So okay. He's always trying to find out how this works or what that is or okay. This is. So he's the curious one, the one that always goes out and explores. The large, overweight, good-natured gargoyle takes the name of Broadway.
Of course.
He develops a strong dislike of guns and a great appreciation for old movies, particularly detective ones.
This is some cool shit for a kid's cartoon.
Right. He loves food. He loves to eat. He loves good food. So he's a connoisseur of food. Demona is Goliath's former mate, mm-hmm. and she's the one that kind of betrays them, Macbeth style, so okay. to speak. And then, of course, I mentioned earlier Bronx. He was kind of the pet of Hudson primarily, but not, you know, they hung out a lot. In other words, he was played by Frank Welker, which, Kevin, who did Frank Welker voice that we all know and love?
Megatron from Transformers.
There we go. Megatron nice. From Transformers. So it's got a great cast of character voiceover actors and stuff. In fact, the voice cast, a lot of people from Star Trek The Next Generation did voices for this. Jonathan Franks.
Oh, Commander Riker.
Or Jonathan Franks. I'm sorry. Yeah, Commander Riker. He did the voice of Xanatos. And the lady that played Deanna Troi did a voice. Uhura, the lady that played Uhura, Nichelle Nichols, she did a voice.
From the original Star Trek?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Kate Mulgrew, which was Catherine Janeway on Star Trek Voyager, she did a voice. Brent Spiner.
Data.
Data, he did a voice.
Somebody who's a huge Star Trek fan.
Yeah, must be.
Yeah, Colm Meaney did a voice. LeVar Burton did a voice. Michael Dorn did a voice. Like
Worf.
Right. Wow. All these people from Star Trek,
goodness.
The Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, they all did voices on this show.
That is one heck of a cast.
I know. It was a hugely popular cartoon. It was actually, when it came out, it was people akin it to and favorably compared it to Batman the Animated Series.
Around
for
the same time.
Its mature nature. And its storytelling technique.
Complex.
Which
plus.
We may or may not get to. I don't know.
Yeah. We had a video game adaptation from this. Sega Genesis video game.
Toy Line.
Toy Line, which I bought the Goliath figure. I think I still have it at home in my parents' place. A comic book came out from 2006 by Slave Labor Graphics. And they kind of continued to tell the story. And so it was just really good. Really good story. It's a five-parter. I highly recommend it. One thing I found very strange when doing a little back research on gargoyles was they have a very interesting fan base. And they used to have conventions. It began in 1997 and ended in 2009. They called it the Gathering of the Gargoyles. It was an annual fan convention. Several regular guests close to Gargoyles franchise would come in, like Keith David and Tom Adcox, and they would basically hold special events such as radio play where attendees audition and take speaking roles.
Oh, man.
Yeah. A masquerade ball where they dress up as their favorite characters. An art show where the many artists that were fans could display or sell their artwork.
Wow.
Yeah. Footage and interviews from a 2004 gathering that they had later for the anniversary of Gargoyles is on the season one DVD of Gargoyles,
oh,
which
cool.
you can purchase on Amazon if you wish. So it's all very interesting. The whole story is great. I can't recommend it enough, guys. It's just really good.
That's pretty cool they had a convention, because I know G.I. Joe, Transformers, My Little Pony, they have their own little conventions, but it's cool to see that Gargoyle at one point had its own convention.
It was surprising to learn.
And it seemed to go on for a while.
Too. Yeah, it went on for like 3 years. I didn't, and the convention went on for much longer. So I find that very fascinating that the convention, like after the cartoon went off the air, they started doing the conventions
mm-hmm.
and it lasted that long, or as long as it did. So it's, obviously has a great big fan base, which is was surprising when I did the research because I vaguely remembered it, you know, like, oh, I remember, I think I had a figure and it was, you know, about these gargoyles in New York. And then, you know, I looked it up, I didn't just download or something. I purchased the DVD. From online, had it come in, watched the first five, and it was very fascinating. Again, still a very cool series.
Awesome.
But I think with that, you are on deck here, Jared.
Yeah. Well, I brought something from my childhood very near and dear. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you're taking me back, brother.
This cartoon, I was already, I was a comic fan, but this was the first time I got to see my heroes on Saturday morning. I remember Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, followed by The Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
The crazy thing is these shows were in 1981, I think. So they had to have been reruns already when I was seeing them,
right.
Which is pretty
crazy.
For
all of us, yeah.
Yeah. But I would get up. This is how obsessed I was with this show. This is when, this is going to date us, but VCRs could record.
Yes.
And I remember Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, for some reason it wasn't on like the Saturday morning slot at this point when I was watching it. And it was, when I first saw it, it was on Saturday morning slots. But when I started like recording it and found it again, because it was like, oh, that show, that's the show. I want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
It was on at 6:30 in the morning.
Hmm.
So I would set my alarm, already have it record, even though my dad had it set to record. I wanted to make sure it was recording and I wanted to watch it while it was recording. And then I'd just watch it like all day.
Dedication.
Just that episode.
Dedication.
I would do that with Ninja Turtles.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I was obsessed with this show. And still to this day, it's one, obviously I'm talking about it. It's one of my favorite shows. What I loved about this show is prior to this, you had a solo Spider-Man show. I think it was it was kind of the similar animation and they kind of kept it in the same world. But Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, you had Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and you had Iceman and Firestar.
Yes.
And a little trivia is Firestar was originally supposed to be the Human Torch, but which made more sense because Spider-Man in the comics would team up with the Human Torch pretty frequently.
Right.
But they couldn't do that because something about the Human Torch was already being used on a cartoon show. There was like that really old Fantastic Four show.
Yeah.
But
with Herbie the robot.
Yeah. But that was like the 60s, but it was something like they didn't have, I think it was just rights. They just didn't have the rights to use Human Torch. So they created Firestar for the show. Firestar, like Harley Quinn and some other characters, was created in a cartoon version before she went into mainstream comics, which she would eventually do.
Wow.
Yeah. So she was created for the show. Other characters included Aunt May, obviously, and Miss Lion, I believe it was Firestar's dog. I don't know what kind of dog she was, some kind of Shih Tzu, and she had like bows in her hair, and she was just, real funny comic relief. And when I say funny, I have huge quotes on that funny, because it was just really corny. But what I loved about this show is there were so many guest stars, great villains. Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery is one of the best. But also, they brought in, there was an episode with the X-Men, there was an episode with Sunfire. It was just like, I got to see the Marvel Universe on my TV in full color, like, alive. It was so cool. And the episode I chose to talk about was one of the ones that just blew my mind the first time I saw it. It was called Seven Little Superheroes.
Hmm.
Just a brief synopsis.
Do they shrink?
No, they don't. But so a mysterious stranger invites the spider friends for a weekend retreat to Wolf Island. They just get these random invitations like around the street. Oh, hey, you're going to go to Wolf Island? Yeah, I got what. Like Iceman's like, I got that too. And Firestar's like, me too. Let's go to this random retreat on a place called Wolf Island.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. and at Aunt May's request, since they're going on a trip, she says, you should take Miss Lion with you. Because, that makes sense. She doesn't, Aunt May obviously doesn't know they're superheroes. They just say they're going on a trip. So she goes, you got to watch them. On their arrival to the island mansion, the trio discovered that four other superheroes were also invited. And this is what was blowing my mind as a kid. I was like, whoa, because they were so random. Submariner, Shanna the She-Devil, Captain America, and Doctor Strange. So right there, I'm like having as much as a little kid comic boner you could have at that time.
Right.
Whatever it was, I was just getting giddy inside. I was like, these are all these superheroes in the room together. They're cartoons and they're anime.
I can see you crying.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And what we find out is the mysterious host is none other than the Chameleon. One of my favorite Spider-Man
films. Nice.
And another little bit of trivia. If you watch this episode, and you could watch all these on YouTube, which is cool. The voice of the Chameleon sounds very
familiar. He's very dramatic. I'm the chameleon. It's super like seven. The whole time he's saying these. The whole thing is he gets them on the island and he wants to set up traps for them to capture them all. And as he's doing it, he's doing these like Dr. Seuss like rhymes. He's like, seven little superheroes fallen one by one. This guy went that way and now there is but one. Like, he just kept doing all that.
God.
But I'm sitting there going like, who is this? The chameleon's voice sounds really familiar. Look it up. It's an actor, an old actor by the name of Hans Conried. And you Disney people might recognize him as Captain Hook.
Wow.
Yeah, Captain Hook was doing the chameleon. And this is how even nerdier I got, because I'm a Disney nerd too. There's a line in it, and I can't quote the line. It's something like, it's a line that in the Peter Pan movie, when they kidnap the native girl, Tiger Lily, mm-hmm. and he says something like something about like something with water and the happy hunting ground. They had him say that line in the Spider-Man cartoon. Like, obviously, they're like, yeah, Captain Hook is in our cartoon.
Nice.
Like, he's doing that. So, basically, though, you have them go through all these traps, the chameleon, because what can he do? He can look like anybody he wants to. So, he's giving them a run for his money. He's like, I'm Shadow the She-Devil, Captain America. Come over here to this quicksand. And Captain America's like, sure, I'll do it. And he's like, wait, what? It's quicksand. And he's like, it was me, the chameleon.
Yeah.
So it's a bunch of just nefarious, like, mustache twitching, twirling. It's really awesome. And the best part is at the end. So after all the heroes finally figure it out. Some of the traps. I just got to go over the traps. One of them is Submariner is like, this is so stupid. Like, he's, you know, arrogant Submariner. He's like, I don't have time for this. What's this? A pool of water. I'm going to go take a swim and refresh. And he goes into the water and he's like, oh, it's not water. It's alcohol drying up. And he passes out because it just dries him up.
Wow.
And then Shanna the She-Devil is the best too. She's like doing like, you know, her jungle action. She's running through the trees and this giant, you know, mechanical robot comes out, grabs her, and this opens his mouth and goes, rah! And just throws her in. And that's how he captures Shanna the She-Devil. Just swallows
Yeah, that's
her.
Easy. Yeah, yeah. You got to create a very intricate like robot creature to put her in its mouth.
Exactly. So, of course, it's Spider-Man's show, even though he's got his amazing friend. So, Spider-Man manages to escape and discovers that the island has been rigged to explode.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
So, with only seconds to spare, he rescues his friends and then apprehends the chameleon. Everybody escapes thanks to the help of Miss Lion, who is affectionately deemed the eighth little superhero.
Oh God.
So
hey, it's a kids show.
Show, and it's super campy, but it's so cool. It's still like they still hold up as far as like they're just fun superhero shows. Definitely not the in depth storytelling that we're going, you know, from your shows.
Right, we just switched like gears.
Yeah. No.
It sounds more like Scooby Doo esque.
Very Scooby Doo, and it just tickles. Like, one, if you're a comic fan, it's really funny to see the interpretations. Like the one of my other favorite episodes was the X-Men Adventure. And you get to see the first time you see the X-Men animated. You see Colossus and Kitty Pryde. This is what I love. They had Thunderbird.
Oh.
Who was in like literally like two.
One issue.
One, I think two issues.
Two issues.
Of X-Men. And they never really gave him a defined power set. Like they said he was like super strong and fast. But they kind of gave him this lame power set because I think they knew they were just going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So in the cartoon, he's a Native American. So what do they have him do? He can turn into a bear. He turns into a bear randomly. I was like, that's not your power. And there's even a line where Iceman's like, I didn't know you could do that. So I was just like, that's got to be tongue-in-cheek of somebody just like writing that shit in.
Right, having fun.
Yeah, so it was just a really cool show. There's a Juggernaut episode, like I said, the Sunfire.
I love how Iceman formed himself. Like when they're, you know, getting ready to get dressed to get into his costumes, he always like formed himself and he bust out.
Yeah, that's right. He just, yeah, make it like a brick wall and smash it. And I think that's also where, I could be wrong, but where they really went with the ice slide for Iceman. That's mm-hmm. how he got around everywhere was the ice slide.
Yeah, that ice slide was cool.
So that was just, I love Spider-Man's Amazing Friends. Like I said, you could see all the episodes on YouTube. I don't know why they won't do a, I'm sure it's another rights thing, but to do a standard DVD release. Because it was only two seasons, like 22 episodes or something like that.
Yeah.
But good stuff. Kevin, what's your second one?
Yeah, you got a second one.
Yes, I do. My second one is the classic 90s X-Men
the animated series.
Ooh.
That is a classic, yeah.
Love that.
Another one. I got up early and recorded.
The opening, the pilot, what is it, Night of the Sentinels?
Yes, mm-hmm. sir.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I had never, up to that point, I had never been brought in to a cartoon like that before with that.
They also hyped it up a lot. Like there was a lot of advertising. I think they even like had the pilot like at night. Like it was at like 5 o'clock or something.
They did a deal with Pizza Hut too, where they brought out like comics, individual comic mm-hmm. books with different covers. That they would come out like every other week or every month or something. And then they had the VHS, Night of the Sentinels. You mm-hmm. could get like part one and two. You could purchase for like $2 or something if you got a personal pan pizza.
Oh, it was, pizza. They knew how to do it.
Pizzas. Yeah, they did back
Little
then.
Little personal pan pizzas.
Oh, yeah. You know, when they had that read a book thing or whatever, the mm-hmm. book club.
They still do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would lie. Okay. Kids, don't do this at home. But I would lie and say I read certain books, and I would just write down what I wrote.
I read all the books. Give me my pizza.
And I would have my parents sign it. I'd be like, look. I was like, do you want to pay for my pizza? And my dad would be like, I don't want to pay for no pizza. And he'd sign the thing.
Then sign the goddamn.
I know. I was like extorting.
Say I read Huck Finn.
Right. So I would then take that to Pizza Hut and I would get a free personal pan pizza.
And it worked.
And it worked. Yeah, it was horrible.
That's awesome.
Don't do that. Anyway.
Well, my episode comes from season 4, episode 16, called Xavier Remembers.
Great episode. I remember it.
You remember it. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Basically, you're at the X Mansion and you see like this dark cloud and lightning come above. And we find out that Xavier suffered a concussion recently. And with that concussion, it unfortunately interferes with his telepathic psychic abilities. And his old enemy, the Shadow King, makes a reappearance.
As we've seen in Legion, the hit show Legion.
Yes, indeed.
That's so good.
Yeah.
So Xavier, you know, had him locked up in the astral plane, you know, previously, or in another episode. And what happens is he got released through this concussion because he didn't have full control.
Mm-hmm.
And the X-Men, like Beast, are trying to figure out, you know, what's wrong with Xavier. He's healthy, but he's just not, you know, he's not well. You know, they don't know what's wrong.
He's not himself.
He's not himself.
Yeah.
And, you know, later on you find out that Shadow King is running loose in the astral plane. And eventually, you know, Xavier has a memory flashing back to how they first met. He's like, oh, wait, I know who you are. You're the Shadow King. You know, you see a flashback to a young Storm stealing his wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And he telepathically communicates with Xavier to come inside this saloon or whatever in Egypt, in Cairo. And they talk, you know, they have a little philosophical thing about, hey, you know, humans are below us. We should do this and that.
Was it Amal Farouk or was it the other?
It's Farouk. Absolutely.
Yeah, they had the thing that was so cool about the show is they literally ripped these stories from the comics. Like it was
great.
Yeah,
it gave you more it gave you further insight.
Mm.
But you know, they have they kind of flashback to the earlier battle they had, their first battle, and Xavier defeated them and he locked them up in the astral plane, like mm-hmm. in some prison. And basically, with this situation where Xavier is vulnerable, Shadow King takes over his body. So Xavier wakes up and thinking, oh, Professor, you're back. Oh, thank goodness. And it turns out, you know.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Surprise. So Shadow King's very smart. What he does is say, hey, he takes over his body and say, hey, you know, what you gonna do? Because Wolverine, you know, Wolverine being Wolverine, he wants to like cut him open. He's like, you know what? I'm gonna cut the Shadow King open, essentially, you know?
Right.
And it's like, no, you can't do that, you know? And so Shadow King's laughing, ha ha ha, I have the best hostage, you can't touch me, you know, that kind of thing.
I have the upper hand.
And then Storm comes in, like, oh no! Like,
Mistress of the elements!
Yeah, well, in this case, not helping at the moment, because Storm...
And wasn't she, like, really affected by the Shadow King, though? Because yes. he had done some
prior episode where it showed how she was, like, his slave at one point.
And matter of fact, before I forgot to mention, when Shadow King comes about, he's forming these fears, he's tapping into the fears of all the X-Men. Or at least situations that bother him. So, for example, he creates an illusion of Sabretooth to fight Wolverine. So Wolverine's, of course, you know, pissed off, like, I'm coming after you.
Yeah. Running around the mansion, you know? Just fighting air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jubilee is being attacked by a Sentinel because that's her fear. You know, Storm is being, you know, is feeling that claustrophobia, everything closing in on her. So, you know, Beast and everything. I say, hey, look, Jean Grey has explained, look, it's an illusion. You got to fight it. You know, don't worry about it. Shadow King's like, ha-ha, I don't care. You know, you're not going to do anything. So... Xavier, in the meantime, with whatever little energy he has left or psychic ability, he taps Jean Grey. He's like, Jean, Professor, come with me. You know, come to the astral plane, help me fight. You know, essentially help him fight the Shadow King there. So that's basically what happens. Basically,
they battle him together, right?
Yeah, they battle him together, and it's great. You know, they're going at it.
What was cool about the astral plane battles is they could, like, whatever they imagine,
they can create. Yeah. Yeah, so they both of them could create this crazy armor around themselves.
Everybody was a Green Lantern in the shadow.
Pretty
world.
Much, yeah.
It's funny you mention it. That's what's Green Lantern. Well, yeah, like a Green Lantern thing. But also, remember, like, the lightsaber type swords they created?
Lightsabers,
they're going
much.
At it.
Zoom.
Yeah. So eventually, there's like a vortex, and Shao Kahn's being sucked into it. But meanwhile, he grabs, you know, Jean Grey is about to, he's like, you know, if I'm going down, I'm taking her with me. Ha ha. And he almost takes her in. But eventually, you know, it's all said and done. The two of them, Xavier and Jean Grey, you know, form like a psychic, like a kind of like they combine their powers. They're able to zap Shadow King back into this vortex. And that's the end of him. And then everything, the sun comes out.
Of course.
Xavier opens his eyes. Jean Grey opens her eyes.
Birds chirp.
And of course, Cyclops being Cyclops. Oh, Jean. Exactly. Jean. Oh, I miss you. That kind of thing.
God.
You know?
Yeah, they made Cyclops a total bitch.
Yeah. It was funny. Cyclops barely had any lines. Barely said anything in this. It was kind of great, by the way.
Yeah. You know? Well, they would do that. That was, especially later on, they did those like character-centric episodes too, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Especially, well, there was one good one with Cyclops when he meets his dad, Corsair.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was a good one. And also his brother, he kind of finds out about Alex.
At one point, Kevin and I sat down and we watched every single episode.
It's like 9 years ago. Yeah, it was you, myself, and Matt. Yeah, another friend of ours. Yeah.
I did that with my daughters. We watched, I think we've watched all but two still.
Really?
We don't watch the Captain America. Well, those later
ones. Now, did you watch the original pilot episode? Because funny, that's attached to my DVD set. The Pride of the X-Men.
Oh, yeah, where Xavier moves his legs.
Which was also the same animators as, I think, G.I. Joe.
Yes.
And some of the same voices. You could hear it. You're like, that's so-and-so from G.I. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that show, I never knew why that didn't take off.
Something happened where I guess maybe they lost the contract. So something must have went wrong.
Well, I remember that was another thing. They had the Marvel Action Hour.
Yes.
And they had Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. They had, like, RoboCop. It was, like, whoever they had the rights to. And then there was, like, a third show that would come on. That all the time, I forget what it was, but then one day, and they would show it before, they'd be like, Spider-Man's Amazing Friends, RoboCop, and then that show, and then one day they went, Spider-Man's Amazing Friends, RoboCop, and X-Men, and I like probably bust, yeah, same thing, like little Jared Boner in his pants, like, what, did they just say X-Men? And then sat there to see what they were doing, and then saw this really cool badass show of like the X-Men cartoon, and I was like, oh my god!
Wolverine was a Scotsman, I think, or something?
Australian.
Yeah, yeah. Australian.
They always made him, they even made him Australian in the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends episode. He's in an episode, and they made him Australian.
Fascinating.
I don't know why they insisted, and then ironically,
Hugh Jackman.
An Australian plays him later on.
Yeah, it's like this, foreshadowing.
But he's straight up Canadian. It's like, that's like this one of the things that everybody knows.
We'll say,
I don't know.
Well, Donald, let us move on to your second one.
Sure. I've got something, it's a little unknown, probably to most people. I got a little series called Exo Squad.
Oh, I've heard of it.
Oh, well, good
I
man.
I had to look it up, and I saw the toys. I remembered the toys. I don't remember the show at all.
Yeah, they were these, like, combat suits. The Exo... what did they call them? Exosuits, I think is what they called them, yeah. And they would get inside of them. It was basically like Sigourney Weaver's big metal suit that she got in to fight the queen bitch at the end of Aliens.
But like super tech, even more tech ones. They are, though. They were totally like that.
Exactly what it looked like, though, right? That could fly with guns.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, can you refer to the queen xenomorph? That's a
queen super bitch.
Well, she did say, get away from her, you bitch. So I just put two and two together. But to be quick about this, the show is set in the beginning of the 22nd century and covers the interplanetary war between humanity and Neo-Sapiens. Neo-Sapiens are a fictional race artificially created as workers/slaves for the Terrans, so for the humans.
Okay.
The narrative generally follows the Able Squad, which is an elite Terran unit of mecha pilots on their missions all over the solar system. The series ran for two complete seasons in syndication from 93 to 94 and was canceled after one third season episode had been produced. So the story is basically the series is set in the years 2119 and 2121, several decades after humanity has expanded its presence beyond Earth, terraforming and colonizing Venus and Mars. This cartoon is very heavy, guys. It's not something that, like, little kids would probably be into, except for like the little battle suits they might find cool and buy the toys.
So that's some depth.
Right. The three planets that they terraform are the home worlds, the core, first of the Terran interplanetary state, and later of Neo-Sapien Commonwealth would be Mars. Not all Terrans are affiliated with the home worlds. However, there are pirate clans and outer planets who live, amongst themselves, and they don't talk too much with the interplanetary clans or whatever. Right. There's a looming war with the pirate clans between these home worlds, the core home worlds. Basically, the pirate clans are coming in and they're pilfering the ships that are on their way to the home worlds, and they're taking things. So these home worlds are arguing back and forth. Should we go to war? Should we not go to war? That is where one of the Neo-Sapiens comes in. And one of the Neo-Sapiens is not the nicest man in the world. So basically what's going on is that the pirate clans have been attacking these ships that are headed towards the home worlds, the Commonwealth home worlds. And they're deciding in this council meeting whether they're going to go to war or not. And, you know, some of the planet people are like for it, some are against it. We need to make peace. No, we need to have war. You know what happened the last time 50 years ago? We decided to never war again, and we're not warring anymore. And, you know, this would not happen in today's world, of course. But basically, the governor, the Neo-Sapien governor of Mars, Phaeton, he steps up. He's like, if I may, he's like, I know that me and my people, 50 years ago, there was this uprising with my people that you quelched and you squashed us and you defeated us. And we're just now getting rights as actual beings that deserve to. And I know I'm just very humble, but I feel like we should go to war and fight for what's important for us. And I'm going to put all of my people's efforts on Mars into helping you with this war.
Hmm.
So they're all like, all right, we're going to do it. We're going to war. So they go to fight the pirates. What they don't know is when they go to fight the pirates is that they've sent most of their fleet. Is that Phaeton has decided that this is a perfect time for the Neo-Sapiens to become the rulers of the world. And so him and his Neo-Sapien brothers and sisters decide to join together and form another uprising to upheave the government of today and take over as the new leaders of the free worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So they do this, and basically it then happens to where this group of people, the elite squad, the Able Squad, basically becomes more like guerrilla warfare fighters fighting with a small group of humans, of Terrans, mm-hmm. to try to take back their home planet and other planets as well, and basically free themselves of this Neo-Sapien rule.
This is goddamn insane. This is like, it's a complex. It's like a real sci-fi book.
I know.
Or something like that. Like some right. Asimov shit.
I mean, it's really touching you, Jared, taking the glasses off, man.
Yeah.
There's a certain character in here I want to mention. His name's Marsala. Marsala is one of the Neo-Sapiens, but he decides to fight with the Terrans. And he's part of the Able Squad. So Marsala is instantly feared by all the Terrans as he's going to betray them. He's going to do something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to prove that his species can move forward and be a voice for positivity and good by siding with what he says is the side of the righteous, of the people that, you know, they're trying to make strides with the Neo-Sapiens. They're not trying to domineer them anymore. They don't want them as slaves anymore. Mm-hmm. They want to work side by side with them. So he wants to work side by side with them. While the main focus of the show is the Able Squad, individual episodes and story arcs are frequently dedicated to other characters as well. For example, there's a C5 Jump Troop Squadron, several Homeworld Resistance Cells, prominent pirates and high-ranking Neo-Sapiens all get large amounts of screen time.
Do the Neo-Sapiens look different than the humans?
Yes, they do. They're larger.
Okay.
They're kind of purple.
Okay.
They've got big heads, kind of not like huge, but they look strong.
Okay.
Like they're made of more bone, and they have, I think, 3 or 4 fingers instead, and they're large fingers, and they're just very intelligent. They're able to handle things better, damage, battle, They're very, very, very powerful creatures. Very powerful beings, these Neo-Sapiens. Themes amongst the Exo Squad, they had a very serious approach to the plot with several intertwined narrative threads and a number of characters displaying a full spectrum of human emotions. There was relationships, love, hatred, personal tragedies, treachery, betrayal, and amongst many, many others. Now, there's no real, nobody says like all created by or done by it, I don't think. Michael Edens, he was the story writer and editor in the second season. He credited the show's realism for much of its success. He said prejudice and racism are reoccurring themes in the series. Mm-hmm. You know, both Terrans and Neo-Sapiens are shown to harbor hatred and a sense of superiority towards each other. There's interplanetary politics, space war, military science fiction, just all kinds of things that you wouldn't normally see in a cartoon.
No.
And basically what happened was this cartoon was kind of pushed back a little bit, pushed to the wayside. And I don't know because of the themes or what, but they pushed it to where it wasn't coming on until like 4:30 or 5 or 5:30 in the morning when it would air.
Yeah. No wonder. So,
right. I used to watch it in the afternoons after school. And then I found it on another station early in the morning when I would get up. So I would literally, and I am not a morning person, guys, at all. Anybody that knows me knows I hate them. I would get up extra early to watch the episodes before school.
You know, I did that too for like Brave Star.
That's dedication.
Yeah.
Another interesting tidbit is the show. It was conceived originally in 1989 by Jeff Siegel, who had been the head writer and story editor of Challenge of the GoBots.
Oh, wow.
For Hanna-Barbera Productions. So it's funny that somebody that comes from something that's seen with such hatred, I guess, or silliness
right.
as the inferior Transformers could bring something so realistic and so pivotal to the cartoon world right. and to bring such a serious storyline to it. It's so good, guys. I can't tell you how much. This is one of my favorite cartoon series of all times. They did Sega Genesis did another video game based on this property, much like Gargoyles. And it even had a short-lived Topps comic book series.
Wow.
Which also ties in, of course, to our short box talk about comics and stuff. So I just highly recommend it. If anybody out there has not seen it, find it. I believe you can find it on YouTube.
Did you have a Sega Genesis
to play these games? I did have a Sega Genesis, yes. I primarily played Phantom 2040, which was almost one of the comics I talked about. And that's particularly because I recently met Scott Valentine, and he was so awesome. And Scott, I just want to give you a quick shout out. If you listen to this, I think you're an awesome dude, and you were an amazing voice talent in the Phantom 2040, definitely.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, everyone. Just wanted to mention real quick about a shop in Canoga Park, California called Spiro's Heroes. Elliot, the proprietor of the store, has over 300,000 books in what's called the Temple of Comics. That's Spiro Heroes in Canoga Park. SpirosHeroes.com.
Nice.
But with that being said, I think I'm done with my Exo Squad. And Jarrett, you got the last one?
Yeah, last but certainly, most definitely not least, Batman the Animated Series. To me, this show is hands down my favorite superhero show. It's one of my favorite animated shows. It's one of my favorite shows, period. If you ask most Batman fans, connoisseurs, whatever, Kevin Conroy's interpretation of Batman is my favorite Batman interpretation. And the stories, the look, I mean, honestly, we can do a whole episode of just us talking about Batman the Animated Series and various episodes. But it had this film noir feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was real. The writing was real. The characters were
in depth.
The villains had
personality,
depth, and their origins were. It was just you love to hate them, or you hate it to love them.
Yeah, three-dimensional characterization
all over the place, from Harvey Bullock to Gordon to the Mad Hatter. Like so many just cool characters. And great, great story. I mean, the only time as a kid I could watch a story about two old gangsters reminiscing about being a kid, about being kids and growing up in the street and being like infatuated and going like, this is a very well done story. And I'm like, I'm sucked in.
Right. And they used everybody. I mean, they used the Clock King, Maxi Zeus.
Yeah.
I mean, just like some of the characters that they pulled in to use for it was great.
And obviously, the creation of Harley Quinn was from this show.
Paul Dini.
Yeah. So the episode I chose, and I could have chosen any episode. This one popped in my head first because it was the first time I watched this episode where I went, I mean, the first time I watching this show where I said, wow, they're like, it's really about storytelling. It's not just about using these characters. It's about using these characters to further a story.
Mm-hmm.
And the story I chose was called Joker's Favor. It was in season one. And the central character of the story is not Batman or the Joker. It's this schlub guy named Charlie Collins.
Right.
Yeah. So it starts off with this guy driving through Gotham traffic, and he's just talking to himself, and he's just like, goddamn traffic. I didn't get that job promotion.
Bet the wife's having meatloaf for dinner.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's sort of like, wife's making meatloaf for dinner. Like, my life sucks. And then meanwhile, on the radio, you hear the Joker's escaped and blah, 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 blah. And the cops make him pull over or, you know, move out of the way. The cops keep going. He's like, ah, cops. Yeah, you just do whatever you want to Charlie Collins. You know, I'm at the end of my rope. He's driving. The guy is fed up. And we've all been there. That's a thing, too. You could relate to this guy.
Right.
And then this car starts honking at him behind him and tailgating him. And he's like, you know what, buddy? Shut up. Says something. Starts cussing at the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Guy pulls up, and it's one of the eeriest. I was just watching it today again, and my 5-year-old daughter was like, who's watched Batman the Animated Series and has seen these characters, has seen the Joker, and has been like, oh, he's silly and funny. He's crazy, but he's silly and funny. They made the Joker so creepy in this scene. He pulls up next to him, and he's like, hey, buddy, you know, you watch where you're going. And you just see the Joker just peer next to him and just give this evil grin. And the Charlie Collins guy is like, oh, shit, I just cussed out the Joker.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And he peels out and he goes down this, like, abandoned road. The Joker follows him. It's so eerie because they're all – meanwhile, too, the Joker is not saying anything. It's just silence, and he's chasing him. Ends up at this ditch. He's running. The Joker comes up to him, and he's like, hey, here's your 2 cents. We got something more to say? And he's like, I swear, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I had a bad day. I didn't get the promotion I wanted. I'll do anything. The Joker goes, you do anything? Okay. Give me your wallet. And he goes, there's not much money in there. He's like, I don't want your money. He looks at it. He takes his license.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, Charlie Collins. Okay. One day I'm going to ask you for a favor and you're going to do it for me. And he's like, sure, whatever. Joker leaves and he's just like, I can't believe, like, I made it out of that alive. And he's just traumatized. I mean, it's a really dark, scary. It was the first time where I was like, they're making the Joker, like, how he is in, like, Killing Joke. How he is in, like, when they started making the Joker a serious villain, not just a joke.
Right.
You know, like, even Jack Nicholson's interpretation was campy and kind of over the top.
Mm-hmm.
The Joker in Batman, the animated series, could be really creepy and dark. I mean, he was abusive to Harley Quinn. It was like, it got uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
So, cut to, it literally says, 2 years later, this beautiful, serene, suburban neighborhood, kids playing in the street. You hear the wife go, phone's for you. Picks up the phone. It's Charlie. Picks up the phone. Hey, Charlie. It's the Joker.
Jesus.
2 years later, he's been watching. He's like, so I saw you changed your name to Don Wallace, and you're living in Ohio now. Guess what? You owe me that favor, and you better pay up, or I'll come after your family. I'll come after you. And he's like, okay, I'll do whatever. So in the background, we find out Commissioner Gordon is getting an award for being, you know, a great commissioner. And Batman's like, hey, you know, good for you, Jim. You should get it. Charlie goes to meet with the Joker, and the Joker's like, all right, Charlie, how you been, buddy? Like, he's like, you know, just acted like he's like his best friend. He's like, so I want you to finally do that favor. And here's the favor. We're going to go crash the award ceremony for Gordon. And Harley is going to
knock three times at one point. And when she does that, I want you to open the door for her. And he goes, that's it? You've been watching me for 2 years. I've been living in like fear. You just want me to open the door? That's it. He's like, yeah, she's got to bring in a big cake, man. She can't do it herself. We need someone to open the door. So he's like, okay. So then we cut to the ceremony where he's getting the award. Harley Quinn comes in. Charlie opens the door. His hand gets stuck on it. Because, of course, the Joker's not going to let him out alive. Everybody's frozen with this weird, like, gas that the Joker puts out. Charlie goes to the Joker. He's like, you said you were going to let me go. He's like, yeah, I'm going to let you go, but not alive. They leave. Cut to the end. Charlie gets his revenge. He gets to the Joker. He stops him. You know, but meanwhile, in the interim, he's told Batman, like, this guy has been stalking me for 2 years of my life, and like I've been living in fear. So Charlie has what we believe is the bomb, mm-hmm. and he's like, I've got nothing to lose. I'm gonna kill you, Joker, and kill me. It's all over. And the Joker's, it's the shoes on the other foot now. The Joker's right. like, Charlie, man, calm down. It's not worth it. You know, come on, buddy. I'm sorry.
Hey, Charlie. Yeah.
And he says, here, I'll give you. He gives him his license back. He gives him all the information he has on him that he's been collecting for 2 years back. Mm-hmm. He gets it, and he's just like, fooled you. Thanks for my stuff. Batman takes Joker into custody. He gets his life back. He's, you know, it's, but it was just this episode of like, it showed the pure depth of the Joker's like malicious and
insanity.
And you were really rooting for this Charlie guy. Like, it wasn't like, I hope my hero Batman punches the Joker and saves the day, or I hope he,
it's just this commoner.
Yeah.
This common guy who could relate to. Yeah. And it's just, to me, that was like, as a kid watching that going like, wow, this writing, you know, not knowing it at the time, well, you know, but just going to storytelling, this is like on another level.
What's the name of this episode again?
Joker's Favor.
It was extremely memorable for me.
Season 1. It's the first one that popped in my head. It's like when I, because it was the first time where he wasn't just fighting. It wasn't just a him versus a villain battle. It was something more.
Right. And I have one of that's one of my favorites is, and I don't remember the name of it. Yeah. It might have been called The Grey Ghost.
I think it's called The Grey Ghost.
Yeah. And basically, it's also one of those. I mean, Batman's in it, don't get me wrong. But, like, this is a story of how Batman needs help from someone from his childhood that he idolized as Bruce Wayne, as baby Bruce Wayne. Yeah. He idolized this hero called The Grey Ghost.
It was his show that he watched as a kid. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And so, for some reason, he needed help.
Beware the Grey Ghost.
Okay, Beware the Grey Ghost. Yeah. That was the name of the episode. And he needed his help. So this old guy is like, you know, I wasn't really, it was a TV show, but, you know, the hell with it. You know, and eventually, like, suits up.
When it show, before that, though, it shows him, like, down on his, like, the actual actor, like, down on his luck. He was going to sell the Grey Ghost.
Right. He was going to sell all his memorabilia and stuff. Yeah. To make money, to make ends meet. And then, like, it's just basically Batman showing his love for this guy that played this character that made him, inspired him. And this guy seeing that and it bringing back this glory for him and more respect that he had for himself,
mm-hmm.
and just, it was just such a heartwarming, fun, thrilling episode that, like, the two of them teaming up to fight this bad guy.
And it showed, what they showed is, the show really did well, was showed Bruce Wayne's vulnerability.
Right.
It and really him, showed him as a three-dimensional character.
As Bruce Wayne, rather than, it's just always Batman. It was half the time, it was Bruce Wayne that you would see in the cartoon. And that's important. That was important mm-hmm. for, you know, kids to know that regular guys can do something super.
Right.
And to me, that episode stuck with me, and I just love that.
And do you remember who voiced the Grey Ghost?
No, I don't.
Adam West.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yes. It was a
little, you know what? That makes sense.
That's right. That makes sense. You're right.
It was perfect. Shit. Yeah,
I should
Adam West.
Remembered that.
Yeah, so many great shows. Another one I'm not even going to go into the depth, but
of course, can't forget about Mark Hamill.
Oh, Mark. Well, no, I was just going to say, the voice acting was on another level. Like, I just watched Mad as a Hatter, one of my other favorite episodes,
mm-hmm.
about the origin of the Mad Hatter, and it's Roddy McDowall. Like old actor. I mean, they just got, like, these, like, great voice talents mm-hmm. to fit these characters and give them such depth. Like, it was so
and that
amazing.
That style.
Was Bruce Timm the
Bruce Timm did the...
Yeah, he worked on it.
Yeah, it was Bruce Timm and Paul Dini. Right?
Yeah, Paul Dini was did a lot of the writing and stuff, and, you know, he's the credited for the creation of Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm. In fact, according to this Wikipedia is correct, that was Harley Quinn's first appearance on the cartoon.
Yeah, it was in the animated series.
I mean, on that episode.
On that episode.
Joker's favorite?
Joker's favorite.
Yeah, that would make sense, because I think that's the first time we saw the Joker in that episode.
Yeah, I think quite possibly.
Yeah, it was an earlier episode. It was episode 1 or 2 or 3 or something like that. It was pretty early on.
Yeah, it was definitely season 1.
There was another great episode where the Penguin was after Batman. He got injured, and these little kids had to hide him in like their basement or something.
Yeah, I think it's called "I Got Batman in My Basement."
Yeah, something like that. And then there was one where all the villains are sitting around a table. I think I almost got him. Was the name of it.
Yeah,
and they were all talking about that. There was the one that I thought was really kind of cool was the Clock King one about this just guy that's anal about time and he goes crazy.
Loses his mind.
Yeah. So
the Clayface two-parter.
Feet of Clay, I believe is what it was called. It was a two-part, yeah.
The Two-Face two-parter was
the
another Two-Face great one.
Two-parter, the Mr. Freeze one that they did, the Heart of Ice.
Mm-hmm.
Just
they made
story
you feel
after
for
story.
The villains too, like, you know, or just be like
trying to understand their point of view.
Yeah.
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 They're very sympathetic villains.
Yeah.
You know, I think these villains are the most Marvel-esque villains that DC has.
Yeah, if that makes sense. That makes sense.
Marvel always wants you to have sympathy towards the villain. Like, they're partially right, or they had something. I think that they tried to do that in the animated series. Not so much with the Joker, of course, because he's a force of nature, so to speak. But the other guys, they always wanted you to have some type of sympathy towards them, like something went wrong and caused this.
Yeah,
all very good stuff.
Yeah, like I said, we'll probably do an episode eventually on just this show.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be an easy one. But I think with that, I think we are done on this one, guys. Thank you for listening. Please, please, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, iTunes. We have our podcast on iTunes. We have a video broadcast podcast type thing on YouTube now, mm-hmm. where we go to Stan Lee's Comic Con and we look up some comic books and stuff. So that's on there. Just love us. Get, you know, subscribe,
share with
spread
your friends.
The word.
Yeah, spread the word.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.